This year, experience the NHL playoffs your way. Want to watch a single? Do or die Game 7, a full week of heavy-hitting back-and-forth series. Then check out Sling's 1, 3, and 7-day passes. Watch The Chase for the Cup on ESPN and TNT, starting as low as $4.99. No long-term contracts or overpaying. Just live hockey at home or when you want it. Sling lets you do that. Visit sling.com to learn more.
Brandon Thurston from WrestleNomics is up next, and we're going to follow Brandon with John Pollock from Post Wrestling.
Delivering on the returns, increasing our margins.
Ratings go down the toilet if I'm not here.
All I do is simply put the math in my favor.
We agree that Brandon and John do good work.
The reason is simple wrestling economics.
Told the Netflix numbers. I've been told the metrics a little bit, probably five different times. I still don't get it.
There were respectable wrestling journalists who needed answers.
Thank you very much, members of the media. I hope you all go to hell.
How about we pop a number right here, right now?
Whole part of the show, man.
Welcome to the April 30th edition of Pollock and Thurston. I am John Pollock, alongside Brandon Thurston, with you for the next hour as we are going to be discussing WrestleMania locations. We're going to be talking about Carlos Silva. We're going to talk about the Berwyn Eagles Club, our favorite venue around these parts, and nothing like a good old-fashioned WWE town hall to rally the wrestling industry around to overly dissect what it all means. How are you, Brandon?
I'm fine. Sabres are in a 3-2 series now. There's a lot of beer being drunk downtown on the occasions that the games are in Buffalo. But Boston did survive for now.
Well, I'm certainly rooting.
Update on the Maple Leafs. How are they doing on the other side?
Same as last week. They're focused on October.
Did you see the viral moment from the Sabres game the other night?
Where the microphone cut out and the crowd continued to sing the anthem.
And all of my fellow Buffalonians, I'm sure they were all Americans, 100%, singing the national anthem of the O Canada national anthem. We all know the words. I don't know. Do they do that for every hockey game in the United States, or only because we're a border city that they play the Canadian national anthem? I think maybe they do it for every NHL game because there's so many Canadians. That's my theory. Do they play the national anthem of Canada before every NHL game, whether it's in Canada or not?
It's a good question, because I've only gone to NHL games in Canada, where it's always been the dual anthem.
I suppose I'm asking the wrong nationality person for that question.
Yeah. I mean, I've gone to baseball games in the U.S., and there I have never heard a Canadian anthem. I think they stick to the one and only.
Yeah.
Well, go Sabres. Our Raptors are facing elimination against the Cleveland Cavaliers. We're down 3-2. We'll probably get eliminated, but hey, that's our playoff team of this spring.
You have a new team in Toronto.
The Toronto Tempo.
You have the Toronto Tempo, who had their first ever game preseason. Mm-hmm. Last night, yes. I think you lost.
We're easing into things. I've actually looked. I've wanted to go to a Toronto Tempo game. Not cheap to get tickets. It's all
no, well. These expansion teams are really hot. Like the Golden State Valkyries sold out every game last season. Yeah,
I'm playing the long game. I'm gonna wait till this team is just garbage. And I'm gonna go like year three when nobody wants to go to games. That's when I'm gonna capitalize. I'll get like season tickets when everyone's giving up. This is the novelty season. Okay,
running at the Rico Coliseum. I won't call it the soft drink Coliseum. The Rico Coliseum, which is the smaller indoor venue in Toronto, not the Scotia Bank. Why not the Scotia? Is just booked up with Leafs aren't playing in the playoffs.
Yeah, it's completely free. After the Raptors get eliminated, it's free the entire summer. Okay. They could have got some dates here. Still the best AEW plug when they were first running the Coca-Cola Coliseum, and Taz had to read the on sale information. The Coca-Cola Coliseum. I'm going to get a big Pepsi and walk into the Coca-Cola Coliseum right there. That was your Taz plug for the arena. Never said it again, but we digress. On to our WWE town hall meeting. So this went down on Monday, and Brandon, through certain means, you were able to secure audio of said town hall. There was a...
To be very clear, this was not a public event.
No.
This was an internal for staff. And I don't think it was like... When you hear town hall, you might get the impression that this is on like a stage, which I understand they have done these sort of in-person meetings, like that looks like on the first floor of the headquarters building. Anyway, this was just a Zoom meeting, I think. This was people talking in audio. Well, there might have been, I think there was a video element to it, but anyway, yeah.
Yeah, they do these every so often, and I think they're generally just made available for the employees after the fact. But yeah, it's not an in-person event. It's virtual. But there was like a fair amount of news this coming a week after WrestleMania, so there was reflection on that event. I guess the first story that we reported on was that Paul Levesque, he's staying on as the head of creative. He has signed a new deal that was locked down, and they were able to get Paul to extend with us in a multi-year deal. Nick Khan informed everyone, "We're excited about this. He's the head of creative, amongst other things, and has been doing a great job with us." And so Paul Levesque, it's an interesting question, Brandon, that also brings about the natural question of, if not Paul, then who? That would be groomed for this type of a role. And I'm sure you could come up with a scenario to put
Sir, I cannot think of anyone who would be as well-suited.
I could not possibly fill the enormous shoes, but I would try my best to just simply honor the predecessor. I mean, he would be a candidate, but when you look at that system for all the development of different roles, like I'd have a hard time imagining a Shawn Michaels or a Mark Calloway taking that step up. I even would look at a Heyman. Like, this is an incredibly stressful 24/7 job that I think few are equipped to take on, and few would really want this job ultimately. Like, it's I'm sure there are those that aspire to it, but it's not as though there's this very clear succession plan if something were to happen or they wanted to go in a different direction than Paul Levesque. And let's be frank about it, this is someone that had an extraordinarily significant health problem 5 years ago.
To think about the mechanics of this, I think there was, so we know that Nick Khan has an employment agreement that has been extended at least once, maybe twice.
It's a 5-year deal at first, but that was in 2020. So yeah, he'd be on at least his second deal by now.
So anyway, clearly this is an executive role. It's an employee role, which I think in most cases for most standard employees, it means you're just sort of indefinitely permanently employed, but maybe with these big jobs, there's special agreements that are involved. In any case, I gather that probably Paul's agreement was getting towards its end, but they have renewed it. And what is the exact quote? Because we had heard, I heard the morning that this happened, that there was something to the effect of Paul was extended. So anyway, we did end up getting audio shared with us. And so we do have the exact quote from Nick, which is a number of us, Mark, he's referring to Mark Shapiro, Andrew, referring to TKO CFO Andrew Schleimer, we were able to get Paul Levesque to extend with us in a multi-year deal. We're excited about that. He's head of creative, amongst other things. He's doing a great job for us. So that sounds like he's got an extension and or a new employment agreement.
So we're going to go in order here. Khan also addressed online criticism of WWE during the town hall after being prompted by a question from an employee, which was read by Mark Shapiro, asking how WWE is addressing concerns about over commercialization and creative direction.
Yeah, I've got that audio.
Really, it was a gesture by some, a vocal minority, in terms of not liking the creative. Santa Claus didn't come for that pay-per-view, and so that's really what that was for them.
That was Nick Khan, president of WWE.
It didn't exactly sound like Nick Khan. It sounded a little more gravelly, a little more.
I apologize. I played the wrong clip. That was not Nick Khan. That was someone else.
Yes, that was our predecessor that is no longer named, but still has a minority amount of stock in the WWE. That would be...
Does he have a vocal minority amount of stock?
He is definitely a silent partner at this point, not too vocal. That would be Vince McMahon. Yes, the dreaded vocal minority. It's never the vocal majority. It's the vocal minority.
Did the vocal minority exist? I mean, it seems like the vocal minority is only an issue when people don't like the creative, and only it's only a vocal minority who ever disliked the creative, and the silent majority, Richard Nixon phrase, the silent majority is, you know, they're really okay with everything. They're much more passive.
Yeah, it's one of the funny hypocrisies in pro wrestling is that if you're ever critical of a wrestler, they will play the, well, how many bumps have you ever taken card? However, whenever you would say, man, that was an awesome match, you never seem to get that response when it is someone praising your work. It's only the negative. So it's one of those defensive postures that we see quite often.
Yeah, I always like to take the perspective that all of my problems are really external. They're things that other people are causing, or other things in the world are causing upon me, and none of my problems. I never look inward to account for problems. That feels better to me.
Nick has a philosophy about this. He says, to me, if you make business decisions based on online sentiment, just know that you're going to be making said decisions on a minority percentage of voices, a vocal minority.
Okay, well, we do have the full, we want to play that because you're reading from some of his statements. So why don't we just play the whole thing?
Tough question for Nick. Nick, this came in from our audience, but it's very topical right now, which is, how is leadership, that would be you and your team, responding to feedback in social media and online that some of our core products like WrestleMania feel a little less compelling than they were in the past, including concerns about over-commercialization and creative direction? I would also add, there was a bunch of social, by the way, wrestling fans are wrestling fans, you're never going to please all of them, but there was a lot of social that won. Was not as good as they expected it to be, and night two actually delivered, and maybe then some, on how it folks thought it was going to be. So if you could try to capture all of that.
Absolutely. So a couple things in terms of night one versus night two. If you have two consecutive nights of WrestleMania or any WWE event, you'll see it with SummerSlam August 1st and August 2nd. Of course, there's always going to be one night that ends up better than the second night. So I thought night one was quite strong. Night two, capped with the Roman Reigns CM Punk main event, sort of made Sunday night the night, if you will. Really happy with creative. A number of us, Mark, Andrew, others, were able to get Paul Levesque to extend with us in a multi-year deal. We're excited about that. He's the head of creative, amongst other things, and has been doing a great job for and with us. To me, if you make business decisions based on online sentiment, just know that you're going to be making said decisions on a minority percent of voices, a vocal minority, but a minority nonetheless. Allow me to give you an example. A buck slip, a small piece of paper that I keep next to my desk every day of the year. Roman Reigns from 6 years ago. I can't remember the last time the WWE hated a wrestler this much. He will never work. When Roman Reigns won the Royal Rumble in 2015, fans went to Twitter with the hashtag cancel WWE Network. It trended for 2 days. Another tweet. Why does WWE insult fans like this with a bum like Roman Reigns? On Bad Bunny. I'm losing my mind. Why is Bad Bunny in the WWE? Bad Bunny single-handedly ruined the Royal Rumble. On The Rock's return to WWE. The people don't want the people's champion. The Rock came back one too many times, and now people are sick of him. On John Cena's retirement tour. Who needs a John Cena retirement tour? Haven't we seen enough of him? John Cena's retirement year was so random. Last on CM Punk returning to the WWE, why would they ever return this bum to the WWE? He will never main event again. Again, Mark led with, hey, online sentiment was showing that Sunday night was better than Saturday night. I said CM Punk, Roman Reigns. As anyone who watched it stole the show, pretty good re-signing with CM Punk, who's been a model citizen here. So the most important thing is to have open dialogue. Myself, Paul, the creative team, what's working, what's not working, who to push, who to not push. And of course, like any sport, and I get it, we're predetermined, there's always injuries. So Bron Breakker goes down, Seth Rollins goes down, Bronson Reed goes down, all after the first of this year. We have to pivot quickly and do the best we can And thus far, we're pleased with where we're at.
Okay. So the vocal minority didn't like night one, disregard. Similar people like night two. We ride with them. They know what they're talking about on night two. It's just night one, can't listen to them. Night two, great.
So to be clear, what he's saying there is he has a buck slip. I had to look up what a buck slip is, but apparently a buck slip is just any kind of, I think it's like a sort of like a tear off note or something like that. And what he's describing there is at least one of those comments he has on a buck slip that he keeps at his desk year round. So he keeps that criticism close to him.
So the canceled WWE Network thing, that was from 11 years ago.
It's from 2015, after Roman Reigns won the Royal Rumble. Dwayne Johnson comes out to endorse him to thunderous boos. No one was accepting Roman Reigns. And I guess which has also
kind of been the story of Roman Reigns. This was voiced in CM Punk's entire lead up to this about the fans rejecting him. It was the whole birth of this heel character that they acknowledged. This was a character that was not connecting in that way in 2015.
It's the point he's trying to make as he goes through all of those examples is that these were all successes that there were negative comments associated with Punk's return, John Cena's retirement. We know how financially successful John Cena's retirement was. I would say that's fair. You know, that's a good example. I think CM Punk is a good example. Bad Bunny, I would say, has been a success, and he's pointing that out as an example. The Roman Reigns story, I think, is among the most complicated stories of the last now what 11 years. And it's ironic, and maybe it was intentional that he used vocal minority, because that is exactly the phrase that Vince McMahon used in the clip we accidentally played earlier. That's what he's responding to. He's responding to a question on an earnings call from an equity analyst who's asking, you know, the equity analysts aren't following wrestling closely, who's asking, why is hashtag cancel W Network trending? And he explains it. Well, that was just a vocal minority of people who were upset with the creative, and Santa Claus didn't come for that pay-per-view. They're going to keep watching. I know anybody who complains like that is going to keep watching the television show. This is not any judgment on Roman Reigns. I would suggest it was Vince McMahon's many choices and insistence on getting Roman Reigns over exactly in the way that Vince McMahon wanted Roman Reigns to get over. I mean, that was just emblematic of a broader set of issues that disenfranchised both fans and eventually talent as well. And I believe was one of the catalysts, among others, to allow an alternative wrestling brand called AEW to have a viable shot at being a permanent fixture in the wrestling landscape, which it is today. It's always the risk of the promoter's sin and you know, deciding what criticism to accept and to think is constructive, and what criticism is just you're not going to satisfy everyone. You're not going to make everybody happy all the time. I think that is one of the biggest challenges, and I think it is one of the biggest things in wrestling that is prone to, you know, internal insular delusion.
It is, and I think that's the difficulty in any sort of creative field, is that, you know, if you are doing, like, in 2019, like, it was the same defensive level, even though you could point to where their business was, what kind of impact AEW coming on was showing to the broader marketplace about a demand for a different flavor of professional wrestling. But it was still, the WWE was not suffering in the sense that it was still putting together huge, huge revenue streams on a yearly basis. But it was only after the changeover in creative and realizing that, you know, there was a much higher ceiling to aspire toward. And there were inherent flaws in the product that had a direct impact on its business. And you saw that changeover and where they ascended to. Now, at this time, if you are to look at WWE's business, this is going to be a huge year for the company, barring like catastrophe that you couldn't even predict. And it's still understanding like where, you know, business is a bit softer, but it's not at cataclysmic levels that you would be that it's easy to be very defensive about the playbook that you are running at the moment, but still being able to filter through legitimate criticism versus writing off all criticism as simply unhappy wrestling fans. And that can be a very dangerous game when you just write off all criticism as a vocal minority instead of taking in, you know, inventory on what is working, what is not working, and having the metrics that back that up. And more importantly, it's the intuition of knowing what is working and what is not working. And that becomes a difficult game to play.
We can look back at those years of 2015 to, let's say, 2020, 2019. And WWE's revenue did grow consistently throughout those years, largely thanks to guaranteed escalating TV rights fees that didn't depend on what the TV ratings were or what the attendance was. These were guaranteed TV deals that were locked in for 5 years at a time. If we go back to and look at what the consumer metrics read, they actually didn't fall sharply beginning in 2015, but by 2017, there was this decline that you can see in attendance, you see it in merchandise sales, you see it even in consumer product licensing, which is things like video games and toy licenses and lots of other licenses. So we did see a consistent, and you can look at TV ratings and say those are complicated, throw those away, fine, we still got those other three preponderances of data trends to look at. And I think that is the result of I suspect, dismissing internally the negative feedback that they were getting from just people online, and rather than looking inward and thinking, well, how can we better appeal to this audience? I think you had a very stubborn leadership that said, no, we're gonna do things exactly the way we want to do them. And Paul Levesque was a great relief to that when he took over creative in summer 2022, and WWE's business performed really well. Its consumer business, its attendance, even its TV ratings against the headwinds that TV ratings face, increased a lot. And they were able to increase ticket prices to the degree they have, largely because more people wanted to see the show than in decades. But you have to have an honest look at yourself about what the quality of your product is. And I know this wasn't for public consumption, and we're making it for public consumption. It's an insulting way to look at your consumer base, even though they are providing a minority of your revenue, perhaps a vocal minority of your revenue, as opposed to business partners. People are allowed to feel the way they want to feel, and whether or not you make a business decision about it is another story. But you know, it sounds like you're painting a broad brush upon everybody there, when it may in fact be a meaningful difference. We are seeing some flattening out in things like attendance and in things like certain TV ratings.
Well, we'll move on, because there were several important topics that were covered. And
they talked about AI.
We'll get to AI. Let's first talk about Saudi Arabia, because they have...
No, I want to talk about AI.
This is not doing great for our audio levels here, Brandon. We have to keep you
a calmer
voice.
Sorry, we're supposed to do good with the audio today. Sorry.
Yeah, we got to keep these levels in check. So they are going to Saudi Arabia June 27th in Riyadh, and this was brought up in the call regarding the decision to go, that they are monitoring the situation that is going on in the Middle East, and the fact that they are not going to be going over for any additional shows. Of late, they have been tacking on either SmackDown the Friday before or Raw the Monday after. This time, they are flying in. They're doing Night of Champions on the Saturday, the 27th, and then they are flying out. So this will mitigate the number of people that have to go over. And Nick Khan stating that him and Paul Levesque will be traveling to Riyadh themselves as well. And stating that if U.S. citizens are allowed in at this moment in time and it's declared and deemed safe, we'll all be going there. Saudi is deeply desirous of getting WWE back there and getting events restarted, especially those that come from the United States. And so it is all systems go, but I would have to think, Brandon, it's not mentioned here, but you would have to think there is a plan B, because there's not going to be some like magic date that, anything short of just a complete ceasefire, that I don't see this war ending by June 27th, that you would need some kind of backup plan here. And I would think that that is something they have to be aware of here as they promote this event. And like, if something happens that week, they're going to have to pivot.
Mm-hmm. I think it's notable that they're not planning to run Raw and SmackDown. Remind me, did they run Raw? They've done at least a SmackDown prior to the Saudi PLE in the past. I don't know about a Raw. In any case, not doing either of those. So it's probably easier to organize one plan B than two plans B. Don't know if they are, but if you think it would behoove them to do so just in case. They are going to be doing an international tour leading up to this event. So it could be in an international location if it comes to it. Haven't heard any news lately of strikes on or around Riyadh, which there have been a few. Nick Khan phrased it in such a way as to say that, you know, we're bringing the talent over there that we need, and as kind of making it sound like they're not going to bring extra people or something like that. I don't know if they would under normal circumstances or not, but they're doing the one show. They're not doing two shows, at least there.
And then on to WrestleMania, which was next. And
Nick did say himself that he's going to be there. So it's not as if like, well, I'm sending everybody else into this potential war zone, but not myself. So he is going there too.
On running WrestleMania back-to-back years in Las Vegas, Nick Khan stated that was ultimately my decision. Maybe we don't do that one again in terms of back-to-back, but ultimately it ended up being a successful event. And then teasing, wait until you hear the announcement on where we're going to be for WrestleMania in 2028.
Where are they going? Without
the moon.
The moon? Is it going to be hosted by Elon Musk?
I mean, by 2028, I think so.
Okay. So one thing there, it sounds like he's admitting, saying, oh, yeah, it's a very successful show, which, I mean, on the scale of wrestling history, it's probably one of the most successful shows ever. Maybe it's number two or whatever, you know, three and four next to one and two. But he does seem to be acknowledging that wasn't a great idea, that did play a factor. And I think it did play a factor in the lower attendance that they saw. Yeah. So I think there's some accountability there. That's encouraging to hear if I'm a staff member, that he's willing to say that was my decision. I'm owning that. And we won't do that again. We're going to learn from that.
Not knowing what the gate figures are yet. Okay, so let's assume like they're not going to be hitting that magical $66 million number of last year. Like let's just throw out and say they hit $45 million for two nights. How is that number viewed, and who views that as like beyond it just being down from last year? I mean, are you looking at, like, we know what the site fee was. We know what the tax credit situation was. I think, honestly, if they're looking at this, I think a big area that they're going to be focused on is the amount of tourists that they were expecting that maybe did not go to Las Vegas. Like, if you are spending on a site fee, it is to be attracting the most amount of people that are going to be buying the most amount of hotel rooms, spending money on restaurants. And I think anecdotally, you've heard that this year, just the international fans were not there as in years past. Even though this is going to be one of, forget wrestling, this is going to be one of the most successful combat sports events ever. When it comes to these two gate figures, it's just not going to touch last year's show. But I have a hard time calling this a failure. But how do you feel like we're going to read this if we're looking at, say, like a 20% decline in its gate that it attracted from last year?
I mean, I don't know what's success and failure. I mean, did it make money? Was it profitable?
That's what I'm asking. Like, yes, this is
absolutely. This is probably one of the most profitable shows ever.
Like, I can't say this was necessary. Like, would they have done better business in New Orleans had they stayed there?
I think so. Well, because because the prospective fan, the silent majority fan is, you know, more willing to go because it's, oh, I'm not going to the same city again. I don't have that dissuading me to say, mm-hmm. I'm going to go to the same city. And I think part of this is on the folks who I'm in a litigious matter with at the LVCVA. I mean, they're the ones who also were willing to hand over $6 million to do it. I imagine partly they're motivated by Las Vegas. So much of its economy is tourism. This is not just any other city where tourism is a lesser part. This is, I imagine, like, man, I don't know, let's say like as a percentage of their total local economy, I would think Las Vegas is up there with the That is true for Las Vegas, probably to as much of an extent as nearly any other city in the United States. So I understand that they are having some struggles with tourism compared to years past. Maybe part of that is just because of, you know, the border situation that we have in this country at the moment, and the immigration story that's in this country. But yeah, I think in New Orleans, you would at least not have that issue. You'd not have the issue of like, do I want to go back to Las Vegas 2 years in a row?
Yeah, I think that definitely played a factor. I think they banked on the idea that Vegas is a tourist hotspot, and that there would be that return business that there was not going to be. The factors of prices being what they were, of just the
product not being as hot as it was the year prior.
You didn't have the John Cena attraction of last year. You didn't have Dwayne Johnson attached to this year's show. Like, these are all different factors. I can't pin it on one.
The vocal minority wasn't ruining things for people as much.
Yeah. So let's park the WrestleMania 2028, because that's going to be a separate story that we'll talk about in a couple of minutes, because there's more to that. But of course, AI, which took front and center here, where TKO Chief Financial Officer Andrew Schleimer spoke about the company's use of AI. Do you want to take this one, Brandon?
So he said, what exactly did he say? This is going to turn into a story about wrestling media, I'm afraid, and about just media in general. The three things that we've talked about so far, which are what? The Saudi Arabia story, the WrestleMania issue, and now the AI thing. This was the third most important thing in the story, but this is the one that our friends, the engagement aggregators, really picked up on, because AI is a huge phenomenon and general story in culture right now for good reasons. But anyway, this is what was said here. Basically that, do I have it here? Am I looking at the right spot? Andrew Schleimer talked about their use of AI in general, and particularly around how they're analyzing data and how they're doing analytics. He talked about how they're able to use AI to complete certain tasks, including things like analyzing Netflix viewership data, which I wish they would share with me, and how they're doing that in a much more efficient amount of time than before. Talked about how UFC is using AI to determine their rankings.
Which, by the way, just to compare the tact, when UFC's been using a lot of these AI videos for different graphics within the body of the show. And at a recent show, a reporter asked about them using AI as opposed to not paying artists. And you could imagine Dana White listening to this, the eyes just glazed over.
He didn't
and
care.
His was like, shut the fuck up and enjoy the fights. That was his message. Okay, so a lot less tact than you get here. Okay, he's not using vocal minority. He's just telling you to kick rocks.
Yeah, I mean, Schleimer also sort of acknowledged that they haven't gone as all in on AI as they could, and talked about how there's going to be a lot of experiments. We want you to experiment with it and figure out, you know, the best ways to use it. Do what Ari says are hackathons to really drive experimentation, such that people can get more creative and adopt and embrace AI. So hit my ask, and I think the ask of the folks around the table is pretty simple. Lean in, get the reps, use the tools, pay attention, use the training, and find the friction in your day-to-day processes in your business so things can be used to make things more efficient. And Mark followed up and said, great, thank you. This is a major priority. They were trying to hedge to make sure they were not insulting their chief information or technology officer. And we've got different teams using it. And he started to talk about WWE in here, where he says Nikon and Triple H are using AI for storylines with the WWE. So using it for storylines. Once again, Mark Shapiro getting into trouble with some of his words here. Let me just say that again. Nikon and Triple H are using AI for storylines with the WWE. What's resonating? What superstars are resonating? In what pockets of the country are they resonating? That helps us with our content, our editorial, our creative, our mapping, our this is supposed to say touring, and of course, maximizing revenue and getting our product out to the fans most in need of it. So really love what we're doing there, blah, blah, blah. Okay. So I don't think he's saying, he's not necessarily anyway saying that we are writing WWE Raw and SmackDown with ChatGPT. I don't think that's what he's saying. It's certainly not necessarily what he's saying. I think he's talking about they're analyzing how creative is working by using AI.
I think in any of these discussions now, like AI is just too broad of a term that's just this all encompassing. It's just this label that you need to be specific about how it is being used. And when you say something like Nick Khan and Triple H are using AI for storylines with the WWE, yeah, people are just going to run wild with that statement because it fits a fun narrative that TKO, this big conglomerate that has no affinity for pro wrestling, is just feeding a machine and coming out with storylines that they're just throwing out, just slop onto your television set. That's not what is being said here. And AI is going to be a part of any type of business, big, medium, small, and you are going to get lost if you do not incorporate it. You want to have it in responsible areas, and there is going to be a lot of bad that comes from this, but there also is going to be value to utilizing AI. So I don't have the same pushback that a lot of people do from this, but you can see how like this just took on a life of its own, this, because it fits a very easy narrative of WWE. It's like they're basically letting robots run the show.
Which, if you're frustrated with WWE, it fits right into your narrative. Of course, they're just let it. This is such a profiteering company that they're just, you know. But as far as we know, there's a lot of writers in WWE, and maybe they're using AI for some things. Are you using? Should we talk about this? Is this okay to talk about? Are we using AI in any of our work? Are we AI right now? Is this AI?
This is getting into a Minority Report territory. Honestly, in your data collection, like what is AI utilization in your day to day?
So in my TV ratings reports for subscribers, that is not AI. That is all automated. Those are automated reports that I have manually. Well, I have written those scripts. When I first started learning how to code, AI was not really a thing. I was right before that started. I do use AI to help me code now, with what is called vibe coding, where you don't really know how to code, but you just like tell the AI to do something. And it's really helpful, and I'm able to do things that I would have taken me forever to figure out before.
I think you would be nuts not to be using AI for your type of work. Like, you're not going to put yourself out of work. Like, you're working pretty much among yourself. Like, you, the type of work you are doing, it's an enormous benefit.
I did not go to law school also, and I use AI to help me. I always use it as suggestive. Mm-hmm. You never want to use AI and just say and assume that this is the right answer, but maybe it's giving you the right answer. And then you can go on your own journey and figure out if it's giving you a correct answer. So it does help me. I use it as a suggestive, and I assume unreliable, but suggestive assistant with a lot of things, including not just understanding legal stuff, but helping me litigate certain matters that I'm involved in.
He's got some litigation going on.
I've got some litigation that I'm going through.
This year, experience the NHL playoffs your way. Want to watch a single, do or die game 7, a full week of heavy hitting back and forth series? Then check out Sling's 1-3 and 7-day passes. Watch the chase for the cup on ESPN and TNT starting as low as $4.99. No long-term contracts or overpaying. Just live hockey at home or when you want it. Sling lets you do that. Visit sling.com to learn more.
So, I mean, there were a lot of interesting topics that were brought up at this town hall. We can focus a little bit on what we have learned about WrestleMania in 2028. So today, Brandon and Jack Wannon had a story up on the site, and we did get a response from the Nashville Convention and Visitors Corp. This coming after reports from both Brian Alvarez and WrestleVotes Radio on Fightful Select about WWE being in active negotiations regarding a future WrestleMania potentially taking place in Nashville, Tennessee, which would be at Nissan Stadium. We know that Nashville, they have been trying to get a WrestleMania. They stated as much that they were aiming for next year's show, but of course that show is going to Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. So what have you been able to learn, Brandon, and what is the Nashville Convention and Visitors Corp saying in regards to this?
So we've heard some conflicting things, right? It sounds there's the most information coming out of Nashville. I did send some emails to the across the ocean this evening that they'll probably read in a few hours, asking about London, because that's the other sort of intuitive city that people are thinking of, especially given Mayor Sadiq Khan's meeting a couple of years ago with Nick Khan and Paul Levesque. So we're asking London too. I've heard that Nashville's really close. I've heard that, well, it's not a done, they don't even actually have a bid yet, but we at least did get something on the record here to say that this, there's always a visitors corporation. They have all these different words for these tourism agencies, these sports councils. Nashville also has a sports council. Anyway, we asked them both. Nashville Convention and Visitors Corp did get back to us and said, because we asked them specifically about WrestleMania, specifically in the year of 2028, and they wrote back to us, quote, "We are working on a future date with them," them being WWE, presumably. So I understand the math that Brian Alvarez put out, or the numbers that he put out, doing the math on it. He said a $3.5 million site fee is what they've bid. If you combine it plus the tax credit. So if you just say, they'll still spend about what they spent this year, which is, I believe, $35 million or 36, something in that realm. If you combine that with a $3.5 million tax credit, it comes out to like $10 to $12 million, which we know that this year was a little more than 10. So you'd hope that next year, if your WWE is going to be a little bit more than this year, so that math works out. We're not confirming that, but that seems like the right ballpark.
And we've got Riyadh next year, and technically there's a WrestleMania owed for New Orleans. That's on the IOU list. And Indianapolis as well, which has their multi-year deal through the Indiana Sports Corporation. So those would be the cities. I also the wild card is how well this Mania goes next year with Saudi Arabia, because if I know they are pulling back on funding for LIV Golf, but for the thing, it's not as though they're just going to dry up and not bring events over. I think they're just going to be selective of what are going to be the most effective events. And if this goes really well, there's nobody that is going to bid like Saudi Arabia can. And they will win out over anybody if they truly want an event. And it's also a location where WWE doesn't have to worry about ticket sales up until the night of the show. It's like, this is pretty much a guaranteed check, and we just present the show. It's basically a sold WrestleMania.
All you have to worry about is whether there might be a military conflict in the area.
Small details, okay? Like, you know, you got to crack a few eggs to make an omelet. And so, I mean, that is one wild card, is what Saudi Arabia's appetite is beyond just next year's WrestleMania.
Someone asked me, sometimes I get emails from like students, or usually students who are like working on a paper or something, and they want quotes about, because they've chosen to do a paper on wrestling business or something. So somebody asked me the other day, you know, in light of what's going on with LIV Golf, it sounds like you might know more about the details here. It sounds like the PIF is sort of withdrawing its funding when this was a thing that was largely funded by the PIF, right? To compete with the PGA. Yes. Anyway. Why do you, there's been no sign that there's any issue with the WWE and Saudi Arabia relationship, different organization there. I think the General Entertainment Authority versus the Public Investment Fund, but for all I know, I don't know what the hierarchy is there. PIF might be feeding into GEA, but anyway, why is there no sign of issues with WWE when there's sign of issues with LIV Golf? Are there other issues with other Saudi sports ventures?
So far, LIV Golf is the one that seems it's the most affected thus far. But it does sound as though the days of this just being this bottomless pit of funding is they want some return on all of these different investments. Like LIV Golf, it's a bad business for them. It's not returning anything. They are not going to be threatening the PGA, and it's just throwing good money after bad at this point. And it seems as though that is sort of, we're looking for a return, not even necessarily monetarily, but like in the case of a WWE or for Zuffa Boxing, it's bringing events over here and creating a tourism wing that Americans are comfortable traveling to Saudi Arabia. I guarantee over this next year, we're going to have huge promotional campaigns for WWE programming to enlist Americans to travel to Saudi Arabia and really sell people heavily on traveling there. Because I think
on location, this is going to be a huge year for On Location.
Dude, green shirt guy is going to be all set for Riyadh. Okay. Brock Lesnar guy, he's going to be ready. They'll be on that flight over there and they're going to be asked to bring their friends. So I think, obviously, with the Sella connection, with the Zuffa Boxing, there are deep ties with TKO that I'm extremely skeptical that TKO is going to feel this pinch, even if Saudi Arabia is somewhat tightening the purse strings. And instead of this wide swath of investments, it's where are the key areas that we can see meaningful return, whether it be monetarily or with other intangibles that are going to be beneficial to us. And I do feel they have I think TKO is in very good standing with them.
I would think, look, they seem to have a really great relationship with Turki Alışık because they're not just doing WWE with him. Is he involved with the UFC stuff at all?
Yeah. Not as much the UFC stuff, more,
but they're deeply involved with each other in boxing. Yeah. And I think, WWE going ahead and doing Crown Jewel 2018 was probably a big demonstration of loyalty, I would think, to Turki and to other Saudi officials that even, you know, this is a government that's being accused of luring and murdering, dismembering a journalist. Put yourself in their perspective where maybe they deny they had responsibility for it or whatever. But they I think they probably saw themselves, you know, steeped in controversy where tons of people are dissociating themselves with the Saudi government, including Ari Emanuel. And Vince said, no, I'm going to stay with it and do this show as scheduled. And I think they probably saw that as a big, big demonstration of loyalty from WWE.
Why did Ari change his mind?
He doesn't know why, but you know,
these things, they're cyclical. Okay. Janelle Grant continues to take more of a public profile. She launched an Instagram account this week, and we did confirm this is a legit account. This is the real Janelle Grant that is running this account, and she's made several posts so far, several letters that she has received over the years from the FBI, and you know, she's posted some messages, and I mean, nothing that is earth-shattering or any like new information, but once again, it is Janelle Grant, you know, over this last, you know, 2 months that we have seen more and heard more from her than at any time during these last 2.5 years since the lawsuit was filed. And I mean, we are coming up on 4 years since the first Wall Street Journal story. And I would say we're now at least hearing Janelle in her own words. And, you know, I am sure she is still doing this on the advice of her legal team and such, but it does feel as though she is trying to have some kind of public profile now, which she certainly was not in these last number of years.
Yeah, and I understand this is related, which part of what she's posting about here is this upcoming vote on legislation related to non-disclosure agreements to prohibit the use of non-disclosure agreements in certain instances in the workplace, so that I suppose you would still be able to protect things like trade secrets and legitimate economic issues, but maybe not use them to conceal the sort of allegations that Janelle Grant alleges.
We will move on to some NXT news. They have announced that their premium live events are moving to CW beginning this summer. They have announced a multi-year deal. So their premium live events will air on the broadcast channel where NXT's weekly programming airs. And then a separate deal from this is that CW sports is going to be part of the ESPN Unlimited app. So I'm assuming now both main roster WWE shows and NXT events are still inaccessible for you on YouTube TV. Is that correct? Without an upcharge?
Unless I go to my friends at nordvpn.com/postwrestling and cross the border into international waters and watch on Netflix. Yeah.
Yeah. That is your get out of jail free card or what have you. But this is like two separate deals, but one that will at least get, so NXT, the Peacock deal ended in March. They had Stand and Deliver on April 4th. And in the US that was confined to YouTube. And so that kind of fell in between this deal. So the rest will air live on CW. CW's app does not allow you to live stream, but I did speak with a rep at CW, and the archives, it will go up the next day on the CW app, and that's where people can watch it. And then the shows will also live on ESPN Unlimited for 30 days and then disappear. So if you do have ESPN Unlimited for your WWE viewing, you will have access to these NXT PLEs for a month after they air.
And these, do we know that there's a number of NXT PLEs that they put on this, correct?
They said 20 premium live events over the span of the deal. They just
What's
said
the span of the deal? Like, was it like the remainder of the NXT deal, which I believe is a 5-year deal?
I don't know if these are, you would think that these would be concurrent with one another, but we don't have the length of this deal attached to it. But
I just wonder if it entails something about the frequency of the events. But do we know that the weekday that these will happen on? It's usually been happening on Saturday, I want to say.
They've been Saturday shows, so I'm assuming they'll stay on Saturday, but that's not a guarantee. If CW feels these are better served and they have other sports, like they have a lot of college sports, and Saturday might not be I'd have to look at their schedule because we don't have a date yet for Great American Bash. You would think the summer it's maybe a little easier schedule wise, but it's a good question. Like they could find another night if there are sports that are going to conflict with these events regularly.
And they can't
move to Thursday nights either, because then they'd be at war with TNA.
Right. That's TNA's night. I'm nervous myself, by the way. We'll get to that in a moment. Rights fee on this. Was that disclosed or reported on background anywhere?
No amount listed here. I'd be curious what the amount was. I can't imagine that it was a significant amount that they're getting for this deal. And
no,
I don't even know what they're necessary. Like the CW deal with ESPN, like that's a deal between those entities that, I mean, I don't even know if WWE would necessarily like have any stake in that beyond they are contractually obligated to have their shows. Like CW has the right to shop them. And for WWE, it does at least get your NXT shows onto another mainstream app that is in addition to your broadcast window.
So the NXT deal on CW is a 5-year deal worth an average annual value of about $25 million per year. NXT, I mean, the ratings haven't been great lately compared to what they've been, but nonetheless, even at whatever level they're at, NXT is by far CW's highest rated regular program, certainly anything that's on their weekly, by a pretty wide margin. So it's something we've discussed, in the last few months occasionally. So who would make sense as a home for these events? And CW is one that jumps out. So this makes sense that they would, I imagine whatever they're airing on Saturday or whatever night they put these on is going to do better than what they would have in the alternative in most cases.
And this was first reported by Front Office Sports, which is also a content partner of the WWE.
Yes, it was. Yeah, it was first reported. We should have. We are glad we remembered to credit them.
You always credit. So
do you?
They jumped the gun here. They beat the press release by what, an hour?
They did. So I'm sure they were emailing and sending inquiries and so forth.
From there. Let's talk quickly about the Berwyn Eagles Club, okay? Because I don't know how much we can... let's say me and Brandon are actively working on this, okay? We are in the midst of trying to uncover the uncoverable, okay? That's what I want to call this. This is one of the weirdest choose your own adventures I have ever embarked on. Okay. Every single lead leads you down another rabbit hole that is just mind-boggling in so many ways. I'm going to do my best to summarize. Okay. I'm not going through every detail of this. I don't have it in me. I feel I've written enough about this.
Krull has apologized, and I've heard also deleted his X account now.
Yeah. He's deleted his X account, and for what reason? Yeah. I mean, I only have so much in me for this story. But what we have learned, and a credit to Neil Flanagan, who, to my knowledge, was the first one to point this out, that there were two separate licenses that the Berwyn Eagles Club had. One is the liquor license and one is the entertainment license. And the belief was that the entertainment license was being threatened or outright pulled, and thus they could not run wrestling shows anymore. And that led to the end of wrestling at the Berwyn Eagles Club. John Kraft, who is a regular in the Chicago wrestling scene, he starts a GoFundMe on behalf of Chuck Moreau Sr., who is one of the secretaries, the treasurer for the Berwyn Eagles Club. He is involved in the running of the club. The GoFundMe reads that the license has been pulled, and thus they are asking for people to donate to help out with the Berwyn Eagles Club. Fast forward, and Amber Cologne of the Chicago Sun-Times reports through the Berwyn Police Department that their license has not been pulled, which begs the question, why is wrestling ending at the Berwyn Eagles Club? And I mean, we have been in contact with various people attached to this, and I feel very confident in this. This is coming right from the police department. Like, this license does not appear to be pulled. Now, the GoFundMe, which has raised about $1,500, John Kraft has since made Chuck Morose's... This is just too much. His nephew is now the beneficiary of this GoFundMe. Mm-hmm. So John Kraft can no longer shut down this GoFundMe. He has told us that he alerted the donors about the situation with the license, and they seem to be... They at least understand what the situation is, and there doesn't appear to be any uprising. But regardless, whether you think $1,500 is significant or not, it's still money that has been donated under false pretenses that this license was yanked. And there are no damages that we can ascertain have been accumulated by the Berwyn Eagles Club. And I think what this comes down to is Chuck Moreau Sr., who has I have emailed and not heard anything back. I think whether it was just... I think he just miscommunicated and owed it to be clear about this license, that the fact is...
We're talking about an entertainment license, correct?
Yes.
Which, it according to the law, it sounds like you only need an entertainment license if you're a public property or a public agency. It's not necessarily for private business. That's my understanding.
And so, even losing the license would not necessarily affect them if there's a license to begin with.
I think so, as you know. I think the issue is the liquor license. I believe you would have to have a license as a private establishment, such as the Berwyn Eagles Club, to serve alcoholic beverages.
Yes.
So when I called the Berwyn Eagles Club a few weeks ago, and I spoke to one, Paul McFeely, who identified himself to me by that name and identified himself as an officer of the club. He told me that, I believe he told me that they were losing the license. And I said, why? And he said, because the police in the town were going to do something and maybe take it away. And I said, well, what authority do they have I believe he said that they were going to stop doing wrestling because of the police in the town. I said, what authority do the police of the town have to force you to stop running wrestling shows? And then he started to talk about the liquor license. And I, from my, what I gathered from talking to him is that the liquor license would be potentially taken away if you had things like fights happening at your establishment. I could see the authorities who control the liquor license want you to come and perhaps suspend your liquor license if there's a lot of fights happening, such as the incident that involved Krul, whatever it was certainly certainly physical.
Even if you take out we have debunked the stabbing aspect, but there was still a guy getting completely swarmed here and this video circulating. Like, that is concerning enough. Yes. I think what happened is you contacted him, and I think he was being honest with you about the liquor license. And my thought is, in the hour of you speaking to him and then calling him back,
yes,
I think he realized, or he was told, he stepped on a landmine mentioning the liquor license to you. And when you called back, you did not exist.
He had no memory. He had no memory of speaking with me.
It had been an hour?
It was about 1 hour difference, yes.
You and I have been talking for an hour. I remember how the show started.
Okay. He told me that he never spoke. And by the way, towards the end of our first conversation, I told him my name and he asked me to spell it. I spelled it. It sounded like he was writing my name down. So not just, even if his memory eluded him, he perhaps had a piece of paper with my name on it. Anyway.
I think you spooked them that here's a reporter and he said something that he probably regretted, or he mentioned to somebody. That's my guess. That's my guess of what happened.
Signs point to the Berwyn Eagles Club. After that incident, it's like, I don't know if we really want to do wrestling anymore. And maybe it's going to risk our license, our liquor license. And what value is this place without a liquor license? And
fair enough. But there's a difference between, man, this was a close call and we could have lost our liquor license. We're going to tread carefully and not do wrestling, versus you launch this GoFundMe under the premise that our license was pulled and therefore we need help.
Yeah. Or you could just be upfront about your decision to.
Well, I think this whole story is how one lie leads to another lie. And this is the ultimate snowball effect that has resulted in perpetuating all of these different lies, and you can't keep the lies straight. And we're trying to do the Lord's work here of untangling this mess of a web that has been concocted over this last month.
Yeah. There are rumors of the Berwyn Eagles Club possibly being sold. Last I looked, maybe there's just not a real estate agent involved, but maybe that's an element of this story as well.
Yeah. If we don't sell this story to Netflix, Chuck Morrow Sr. will. All right. We're going to end off with a few notes here about the Hulk Hogan Real American series was released last week, and we did get the figures. It did rank in the global top 10. It was number 5 for the week with 3 million views and 12.3 million hours viewed. It ranked in 10 countries in the top 10. Curious, I don't believe Bolivia made it. I'm stunned.
That's
Bolivia
a shame.
Taking a stand here against Terry Bollea. So I found it interesting to go back and see how did the Mr. McMahon series do the first week. So the Hogan series, again, 3 million views, 12.3 million hours viewed. It's 4 episodes, about an hour each.
Were they released? So the weekday is important here, right? Like, was it, because this is a 1 week window, so there's like a cycle factor here.
Yeah, this came out on April 22nd. So that was a week ago Wednesday, 8 days ago it came out.
So the cycle starts. I think it starts on Monday. It starts right at the beginning of Monday. Wait, does it?
I don't think so. I think
no.
Because this would have included the Raw.
No, because
after.
Raw is benefited. So what am I thinking here? The cycle starts Monday and it ends at the end of Sunday. That's the cycle. It's a Monday through Sunday cycle. So if this documentary docuseries was released on Wednesday, well, we're missing two days where it just wasn't released yet.
Right. Right.
So my question would be, what day of the week was the Vince McMahon documentary released on?
I believe it was September 24th of
September 25th.
25th.
Wikipedia says, IMDb says the same. And September 25th was what day of the week?
That was a Wednesday. So we're comparing Wednesday to Wednesday.
Okay.
So this is pretty...
Wait a minute. That's a Thursday.
September 25th,
2020. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm looking at 2025. All right. You're right. I agree. We're on the same page now. Wednesday it is.
So 3 million views for the Hogan series.
Yes.
McMahon, 4.9 million views, 28.2 million hours viewed, and it ranked in the top 10 in 31 countries. So not surprising to me. Like, this Hogan release feels like, I don't know if you had a different observation, but this one to me really did not even to me make a big dent within wrestling, much less outside of it. Like, the McMahon one, you can certainly say, like, it seemed to dominate wrestling headlines for that week, and you did see outside coverage of it. I mean, granted, you had an active scandal, but with Hogan, like, the guy had just died, and I would think there was at least the curiosity because there's scandal attached to Hulk Hogan as well. But, and this one had the benefit of all the WWE promotion, which the McMahon one did not. And the McMahon one clearly had way more general interest.
Certainly in terms of like an online buzz, the McMahon documentary had more, but that sounds like crediting the vocal minorities. We'll have to think of something else, some other reason. Vince is, you have to respect Vince, and Vince is just such a big star and figure in culture. But Hogan is too. So,
I mean, it's maybe it's the, you know, the when that vocal minority, when they get tired, they do have to sit down and watch something at some point. So that's the end of the.
Yeah, I've not watched I've not watched a second of the Hogan documentary. I watched the Vince documentary like the morning it came out. But that's
like,
obviously,
I've seen the first two episodes. Like, it's not all that newsworthy. I think it was a sanitized version. I don't think they went into any kind. Again, I haven't seen the whole thing. I've only seen the first two episodes, and more of the controversies are going to be reserved for the last half of it. But it's, you know, there's key people not interviewed. It almost felt like it's like checking a box that, okay, they're going to talk about the tape. They're going to talk about this, but are they really going to probe? And it just, I think overall, if you were someone like, you're not getting like a real big, like, sense of a journalistic documentary. But even if you're looking for, it didn't seem like it satisfied anyone.
Have you watched the whole thing now?
No, I've only seen the first two episodes, so I still have the third and fourth episode to watch. I'll say this: the Von Erich doc that aired on A&E this past week, I thought that was excellent. And I think I've seen every Von Erich media known to man. It's like there's no shortage of Von Erich stuff. I didn't think there was anything left to uncover, but that one's probably going to get a fraction of the promotional attention that this one got.
Well, if you want to hear how the rest of the series on Hogan is, you can go to postwrestlingcafe.com. You can listen to the first episode for free, I've heard.
That is true, everyone. If you're on the free tier, you can hear our first episode where, Hulk Hogan... we get Linda McMahon commenting on the size of Hulk Hogan. Or is it Terry Bollea? Because as we got under
Linda, whoa. Linda McMahon or Linda Hogan?
Linda Hogan. Sorry. Linda Hogan. Did I say Linda McMahon?
I think you did. Yes.
Oh, I meant Linda Hogan. Too many Lindas here. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, it's too bad Linda wasn't at that meeting to talk about the benefits of A1.
Linda was testifying the other day before the Senate.
She was testifying before the Senate.
She was questioned pretty aggressively by Senator Chris Murphy, who also defeated her in one of her Senate campaigns.
That's right. And she was at the White House Correspondents' Dinner on Saturday.
Was Shane McMahon. So was Dana White. Dana White thought it was awesome.
Had the time of his life. I mean, what more could you ask for than an active shooter on the premise? Sounds like a great weekend. What a company. What an industry that we cover. So everyone, we're going to land this plane, but thank you to everyone for joining us and checking out the exclusive audio that came our way, courtesy of the town hall, the big town hall. I hope we get to do these every so often. Do you think that your face is on a buck slip?
No, not a buck slip.
No.
My name might be on a list of some sort, but not my face on a buck slip.
You're working on something for WrestleNomics, so I won't.
Working on something, yes.
Okay, you're working on something. He has not gotten access to the butt slips. Okay, he is not going to be reproducing butt slips. But Brandon is working on some follow-up reporting that you can check out at WrestleNomics.com, as you should be on a daily basis, as well as Patreon.com/WrestleNomics. All your TV ratings data, access to stories, and Brandon is always popping up on postwrestling.com as well.
Yeah, we've it's a new month, so we'll be doing another update of the market-to-market analysis and another here's the top YouTube videos across WAW and a handful of other wrestling companies. That's always exclusively for subscribers. Most importantly of all, is we are constantly reminded, including with this this AI thing that we went through the last couple. Not that it's a big deal. It was just another event in our lives. It's important to support independent media, and you should do so by subscribing to both postwrestlingcafe.com and patreon.com/WrestleNomics.
We appreciate all the support. And yes, Andrew with the super chat here, love the fact that they said, we want a bad show and then good show. I guess this is in reference to when you do two nights, there's obviously going to be one show that's better than the other show.
What if they're both equal? What if they're both equally bad?
Not possible. Why don't they brand it like that? Good night, bad night. Tougher to do, right? Okay. All right, that concludes the Pollock and Thurston Town Hall, but you can join us every week where it is publicly available here at 8:30 Eastern every Thursday night on the Post Wrestling and WrestleNomics YouTube channels, and we will speak with you next week.